and a very, very special guest this morning. Delighted that Commissioner Kevin Sullivan, Kevin is the commissioner of the Department of Revenue Services, is going to be with us answering some of the questions that you have. And, Dan, I think it's great that we've got Kevin with us.
It sure is. And, by the way, if you have any questions for the commissioner, you can call 888-574-2723. And, Commissioner, welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
We are fine. Slippery morning out there.
Yeah. What'd he say?
Hope it's not a slippery morning out there. You're right.
And I'll tell you, Kevin, it's always great to have you with us. And people ask us all the time, you know, why does it cost us so much to live in this state? And the answer always is, well, look what you get. But unfortunately, for many of the people, they are leaving. And you know that. We all know that. So what is the reason that it's just more money, and more money?
Well, let me try to answer two questions that are in there, and I'll do it very quickly. One, people get to a certain point in their life where they look for something else, irrespective of questions of whether it costs more or less. You look at the four states where people go to from Connecticut. Yes, one of them is Florida, which is essentially a very low-tax state. The other three, ironically enough, are California, New York, and Massachusetts, none of which are actually, in some respects, higher tax states than Connecticut. So I think you have to look a little bit deeper. The bigger question, I think, probably is, you know, why aren't we able to get kind of our younger population to stay here? And I think that's a fair question in terms of where they see their opportunities and where they see their burdens. The challenge, I think, on the tax side, is the spending side. There's no magic to it. You know, I'm often asked by legislators, how come you're not raising enough money to cover the budget? And the answer is, I'm raising more money every year than I have the year before, but it's just hard to keep up with that budget.
Wow. Kevin, the middle of January is a very important time for the state, as you know, because you get an idea on the collections of taxes, particularly the area of income tax, and it's sort of a pretty good harbinger of how the rest of the fiscal year is going to play out. Can you give us a preview? Have you gotten those numbers yet?
For January, not really. I've seen some dailies. They're kind of running as expected. I wouldn't say that things are doing a great deal better. The market at some point, the stock market, the investment market, will have a big impact. The problem is that that's not a problem, it's a good thing. People are investing, they're not selling. They're not turning over stock. You've seen a very strong and growing stock market, rather than one that's volatile, which is a good thing economically. Last month was a good month, with almost out of exception, five major taxes, outperformed, last year. And in some cases actually outperformed the estimates. I don't make the estimates, so I don't take responsibility for the estimates, but I have to shoot for them. So I think we're seeing more slow growth, but that's the magic word, slow growth. It is not a booming economy by any means.
Now, any of you folks listening to us right now, 1-888-574-2723, and I know that you have questions about taxes, and your questions are generally right there, so you can call. Kevin is going to be with us until 9 o'clock, and you can call us and you can ask Kevin anything that you want to ask him about that.
Kevin,
I'll even take an answer if I've got one.
One of the questions, by the way, we get, particularly from small business owners, and perhaps you can illuminate this for us if it falls under the domain of your office, but one of the questions we get from small business owners is how the state will sometimes just show up and perform a tax audit, whether it's an income tax audit, a sales tax audit, or whatever, and they show up unannounced, and these owners seem put off by that. Can you explain that to our audience?
It is a surprise to me to hear that. We rarely show up. The only circumstance where we will show up unannounced is if there is a criminal issue involved, and sometimes there are. Remember that essentially stealing withholding taxes or stealing sales taxes are not just tax evasion. They happen to be criminal activities. those are or where we think that illegal cigarettes, illegal liquor are being involved. So those are the circumstances which we quote unquote just show up. Other than that, we make appointments and we come and or we have people come into the office. So if somebody's experienced that, I would love them to, and I'll protect them, I really will, I'd love them to follow up after this show and let me know what their experience has been.
What goes through a routine audit? How is it conducted?
Well, we don't do, surprisingly enough, a whole lot of audits. And I think that probably comes as a surprise to people, but if you think of how many taxpayers there are, two things will trigger an audit. One is obviously if we have data that suggests that there is an underpayment, and we do look at a variety of data sources. We get reports regularly from the federal government on businesses' credit card sales. We will compare those sales to reported sales. If we see a discrepancy there, that will certainly generate an audit. Sometimes we will get a report from the field, often from a competitor, but sometimes from a consumer, that there has been an issue. That will sometimes result in an audit. Then if you're a large corporation, not a small corporation, but if you're a large business of any kind, there will be periodic audits, usually on a 3 to 5 year cycle. And what we've been moving towards is a situation where we try to get as many issues resolved in an audit so that one doesn't have to or need to come back again quickly. We know it's a process and a challenge for a business, so we don't want to be there all the time.
It's quarter after eight. We're starting to get some calls now, Dan,
right.
And we'll have some for the commissioner. When you start to think about some of the things, Kevin, in the field of taxes, where do we stack up with some of the other states here in the New England area?
On business taxes, and that's all business taxes, including unemployment and workers' comp and the other ones that people think of, we are rated as effectively the lowest business tax burden state in the nation, the lowest business tax burden state in the nation. The thing that drives that to some degree away from it is property tax. Property taxes in Connecticut are generally much higher than in other states.
Big time.
And in our region, we tend to be very comparable. Now, obviously, we're not comparing to a Florida that has no income tax. It has no inheritance tax. But we're not competing with that. We're competing with the North Carolinas, the South Carolinas. There we're high compared to the region. We're in the middle, and nationally, we're at the low end.
18 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock, we've had some calls, and some people couldn't wait. Dan, you got one there.
We do. We have a question for our commissioner, and again, our guest is Commissioner Kevin Sullivan from the Department of Revenue Services, and if you have any questions for Kevin, you can ask them. Call 888-574-2723. Kevin, we got a call from a small business owner, and he says that he has submitted his sales tax receipts for the period when you're supposed to submit them, but yet those receipts have not been registered by your office. Now, what could that be about, do you think?
So he has paid his tax, and he has not seen it deposited, I guess, is the question.
Yes, is the question.
And there's the only possibility, and I don't know how many days have intervened. If it's 3 days, that's not surprising. It takes that long to post it from the incoming to the outgoing. If it's more than that, there's something wrong, and rather than have them, they're welcome to, but they shouldn't talk about these matters too much specifically. Again, 860-297-5600, 860-297-5600, certainly welcome to call, and I'd be happy to talk about it.
Kevin,
I do take calls, by the way. That, you know, I think sometimes taxpayers are surprised I answer the phone and they go, no, I didn't want to talk to the commissioner. I said, well, you got him.
Wow.
I can say this, that people have told me that Kevin does pick up the telephone.
Yeah.
And do that.
Now, let's say a corner store owner, as an example, how often must they submit their sales tax receipts?
Corner store probably is doing it annually. It depends on how much sales they have and what they're selling. Taxes are either paid on a generally paid on an annual, a quarterly, or a monthly basis, depending on the size, the amount of sales that you have. There's one circumstance in which they may be being paid more frequently than that, as frequently as a week, and that is where, as a corrective measure, somebody who has been substantially deficient in remitting their taxes may be put on the regime of weekly submission until they get it right.
Okay. What about the submission process? Is it all done online in this day and age?
90 in the major tax areas, income tax, sales tax, we're up into the 90% in terms of electronic filing. There are still people who are not comfortable with that. There are still people who choose to file with paper. We try to discourage that as much as possible. It costs more money for us to process the paper than it does electronically, and we've been pushing electronic in order to control the costs of the agency. But the vast majority of taxpayers now do either file or file and pay electronically.
You know, one of the questions, Kevin, that I get, not only on the radio, but when I'm out speaking, way back when this income tax started and the big rally and so on and so forth, that this was supposed to take care of everything. That was the way the state tried to sell it. But yet we're in a position now where there are senators who want this whole marijuana because it's going to bring in money. It just seems that it is always more money, and more money. So I think this is one of the reasons that the people are upset and just want to know the reason why for that. What is the reason for it?
So, I mean, that's an absolutely fair comment, and it's one of the things that the governor was very cognizant of reminding the legislature about on his opening day. Here's the biggest problem. So you take an $18 million budget. Over half of that, from day one, even before you think about anything else, is what's called fixed costs. What are fixed costs? Debt, not the biggest one. State employee pension, teacher pension. State employee health care, teacher health care, and then Medicaid entitlements. So those alone, right, you're stuck catching up to past liability, unfunded liabilities. And until we get particularly the state employee unions to come forward and be part of the solution, I'm a state employee. I always say I would be happy to have my copay double. I would be happy to have a deductible. I'm not happy, but I'd be, you know, it's a very generous plan that we have, and I think we should be expected to share some of this so that the costs don't have to go up, or at least they don't have to go up for the taxpayers. So that's the biggest challenge, and then that'll get a little bit larger depending on how the new administration in Washington approaches Medicaid. If the federal government significantly backs off of Medicaid, then those burdens will flow entirely to the state, and that will raise the nut. So anything else you want to talk about, and then Town 8 is another one. You know, it's surprising to me that we are giving away a portion of the state sales tax to cities and towns when we don't have enough money to pay for the state budget. Doesn't make sense to me, but does to the legislature.
You know, Commissioner, you talk about pensions, and one of the stories in the news is that our state lawmakers are able to use their mileage reimbursement to calculate their pensions. That said, must they declare that mileage reimbursement as income tax when they file on an annual basis?
So if they are not being reimbursed, obviously they're claiming it as a deduction. If they are being reimbursed, it is a business expense, so they're not paying tax on that. And that's one of the other reasons why it's not fair that it isn't, that it gets included in the pension computation, because it effectively becomes a form of income that is sort of escaping taxation.
Why can't we just say you're not going to get it?
Well, that'd be a good idea, too. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that would be perfectly reasonable. We did try that at one point in time when I was in the other life. And it didn't get anywhere, but that's a very fair thing to do. It should be what it is, mileage reimbursement. I get reimbursed for my mileage when I travel out of state. I don't get reimbursed for my mileage when I travel in state. And it doesn't become part of my pension.
So it should be declared, you say, as income, if you had your way.
It should be treated as either as traditional reimbursement or if it's going towards your pension benefit, then in effect it should be a form of income. But Brad's comment is probably the right one. It's just something that whose time has passed.
Mark, West Hartford. Mark, good morning,
wow.
Good morning.
Sorry to call twice in one day, but what a segue, because I'm going to be talking about reimbursement. Hey, Kevin, first I got to ask you a question. I went all over the Internet. I don't see California, New York, or Massachusetts as any destination for Connecticut retirees. Was this an opinion, or do you have a source
a
I could look up?
No, it is a statistic, and I'll be happy if you want to write to me, I'd be happy to share you the source of that. Those are the four top destinations for Connecticut retirees and people leaving the state.
Wow, that's not where all my friends and family are going. Anyway, talking about reimbursement, I've been talking about education funding, our tax dollars. You know, we kind of think about a kid sitting in a classroom and our money going there for computers and smart boards and books and the teachers themselves, when I think a lot of this money is going to other things. Yesterday I brought up how there's a actual urgent care clinic at Hartford High School I'm familiar with, uniforms, security, things of this nature. But I brought up this morning, and I want to know, how is my tax money now going to reimburse parents who give their kids a ride to school? And this is referring to the CREC program. They get $5 per pupil per every day they give them a ride. So if you're absent, you're not getting the $5. So a friend of mine got a check for over $800 last year. For giving his kid a ride to school. It's unbelievable, Kevin. How did we get this far at one point that drunken sailor's got to leave town.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, but the only reason that it wouldn't, the only circumstance in which that would make sense is if it was in lieu of providing, if it was not beyond walking distance, and it was in lieu of providing a school bus transportation. So either way, the taxpayer would be paying for it. They would either be paying for the school bus to go pick up the kid and take them to school, or in this case, they're saying, no, we're not providing the school bus, but if you do it, we'll reimburse you for the cost.
But is that fair to a taxpayer? If a parent opts for a magnet school because he wants a better education, of course, that costs us even more. When you look up some of the tuitions at these magnet schools, and you can look them up online, you know, at the very least now, so we're going to pay twice as much to educate your kid because you don't want to stay in your town. Now you're going somewhere else. We're paying twice as much as a taxpayer to educate your student. Now we have to pay for the ride.
That's a good point, and I'll give you a couple other points that the government.
Thanks for the call. Thank you for the call. Go ahead, Kevin. Please finish your answer, then we got a newscast here.
If you're a very small, there are a lot of very small school districts in the state of Connecticut. They all have superintendents. They all have administrative staff. They all have their own separate systems. No one is saying consolidate them, but the state maybe should say, we're not going to subsidize that. If you want to do that, it's on your dime. If you can figure out how to cooperate with another school district, share administration, share those overhead costs. The state just can't afford to subsidize that anymore. There are school districts where we're actually giving out money in a way that makes it more unequal than it is without us giving money. The wealthiest school districts in the state of Connecticut, there's no good reason why the state should be subsidizing those. So there's lots of cases where there's opportunities to save.
You know, Kevin, this is another area that we have discussed from time to time. And I think this is one of the reasons that the mayor of Hartford is visiting various towns. And you just hit on something about every school has a superintendent, you know, the different systems. They all have superintendents. They all have this. They all have that. And that all costs money. And people wonder. I know I wonder, and I brought it up. A lot of my listeners don't agree with me, but I brought it up. Why can't we have some kind of a regionalization that would be able to take care of this, and we wouldn't be stuck with all the costs?
There are situations in which that makes sense, and then situations in which it wouldn't make sense. So if you're a small district or a series of small districts, there's no good reason not to consolidate. And you don't have to lose control. You can essentially make a contract with another school district to run your schools and hold them to performance on that contract. The flip side of that, though, let's take the Hartford area. So if Bloomfield, just to choose a town for some reason, if Bloomfield or West Hartford were somehow to regionalize with the city of Hartford and all be under one teacher, one superintendent regime, the compensation levels in Hartford are so much, or did it with police.
Kevin, can you just hold that thought? I've got to get the news on here.
News, weather, traffic, politics with Brad and Dan. This is the Brad and Dan Show on the Talk of Connecticut.
8:36, 24 minutes before the hour of 9 o'clock, and Dan's right here with me, and Commissioner Kevin Sullivan is our special guest. Of course, Kevin is the commissioner of the Department of Revenue Services. And, Kevin, you were just talking about the small towns and why some of the areas can't share some of the work. What is the reason that we haven't been doing that already?
I think, well, you know, we're a state that has a very strong and very positive tradition of local government and local control. There's a lot of things good about that. But there are ways in which two school districts, three districts, four school districts can enter into cooperative arrangements without eliminating their independence. There are also ways they can regionalize more formally, and some have, but not many. So I think that it's a case where we've got to really look at that. Should the state be subsidizing that level of inefficiency? And I think probably the answer under these circumstances is no. You also asked about, you know, in the Hartford context, I think Mayor Broden is, when he ran, I asked him why he was doing it, because it's that kind of job. I don't know that, but he wanted it, and he's got it. I think he's trying very hard. But let's just look at the how people outside the city look sometimes. In Hartford, the mayor tried to just consolidate a few schools. He got such pushback on that,
yep,
that he had to stop. And so I think it's going to be hard for him to make the kind of changes he's trying, to make the kind of changes that say to the other towns, you know what, it isn't, by joining you, we aren't joining in just being the subsidy for Hartford, we're actually joining in something that's cleaned up its own act. And that is true of benefits and pay scales. Cities and towns would be happy to cooperate, but we don't want to pay more for services as a consequence of cooperating with somebody where the pay scales are higher.
Talking with DRS Commissioner Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, as you know, people are now getting their W-2 forms, preparing their 2016 income tax returns. What should they know from a Connecticut perspective? What should they be doing?
Well, the most important thing from any perspective is to try to finish and file as quickly as possible. I say that because one of the great challenges out there, the growing challenge out there, is identity theft, and more importantly, just plain tax fraud. People using real taxpayer information that they've stolen or acquired in some way to go in and get to your refund before you get to your refund. And one of the ways to help avoid that, if you have a simple tax, if you don't require a lot of detail, get it done sooner. The sooner it gets to us, the sooner we get it credited to you, the less likely it is that somebody's going to try to swoop in and steal it. We stopped $20-40 million in tax fraud last year.
Wow.
And we know there's much more out there. But it's become one of the prime focus for us as a department. We're a relatively easy state because we basically take the federal AGI, don't make too many changes in it. There are some benefits for people who have Social Security income. There are some benefits now. Connecticut is a state. People should be aware that military income is exempt in the state of Connecticut. But generally speaking, it's a relatively simple form.
We've heard that on the federal level there could be some delay in refunds. What does it look like on the state level?
Yeah, we're not doing that. I mean, the feds have made a decision to dramatically delay refunds, supposedly to deal with issues of tax fraud. We've taken another approach in Connecticut. For example, if you're a first-time filer, you asked about electronic before. If you're a first-time filer in the state of Connecticut, we actually will not let you get your refund electronically. We will only send you a paper check, and the reason for that is it gives us more time to deal with the possibility that you're not who you say you are when you file that refund.
1-888-574-2723. Kevin, you know, one of the things that has got a good many people upset is this whole thing about marijuana and everything else, and it's all again about money. And I don't know. I mean, is there ever going to be a time when we don't have to worry about increases as far as money goes and taxes go?
Yeah, and in that case, what do you get when you get those taxes? I mean, I would be very interested to know in states like Colorado how much more money is being spent on law enforcement, how much more money is being spent in the criminal justice system, how much more money is being spent in drug treatment as a consequence of legalization. I guess I don't know whether I'm old-fashioned or just old. I don't see it. I know the governor doesn't see it, but I think people are very interested in the revenue that comes with it, and I worry about the consequences that come with it, particularly for kids and particularly for the message.
Absolutely. This is well. Yeah. Dan and I are both on this particular team. There's no
Well, that's because we're old, right? That we're all old. No, I think it's. I mean, I was I strongly believe that legislature did the right thing with medical marijuana, but recreational, I don't get it.
Okay, we have more questions from our audience, and if you have questions for DRS Commissioner Kevin Sullivan, you can give us a call. 888-574-2723 is our telephone number, and we are getting some calls coming in, and
here we go.
See what we have next.
We've got Mike from is this the Michael from the
yes.
same Michael? No,
yes,
a different Michael. Okay. I guess we got a lot of Mikes in West Hartford. Mike, good morning, good morning.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Sullivan, I got a question for you. It's kind of rhetorical because it doesn't seem to have any immediate impact on me. But if you're going for regionalization and you have a city, for example, like Hartford, Connecticut, which is a sanctuary city, it's my opinion that sanctuary cities, you know, that provide this protection for some of the immigrant class is an added cost. Now, if you're going for regionalization, aren't you asking other towns that are against sanctuary cities to help spread that cost as well?
It is a rhetorical question and one beyond my pay grade. So I'll go back to talking about taxes if I can. I do not want to get into that.
Yeah. And that's a policy question that really doesn't fall under
really.
Kevin's domain.
No.
So,
okay, but, no, I appreciate that, but I just felt like throwing it out there. But I appreciate it, and I understand. Thank you.
All right, Mike. Thank
you.
Kevin, hacking seems to be a popular
Big
word
time.
These days.
Big time.
So what assurances can you give the taxpayers of Connecticut who e-file?
I think that, I just indicated to you that we are working very hard to avoid situations where that happens. I'm absolutely, I won't say that, I'll regret saying that, I am almost absolutely confident that our system has the controls and the security to avoid our agency being hacked. We are targeted. There have been situations we know of where we have discovered, along with the Department of Administrative Services, that the state or the state tax department has been a target for hacking. They try to take us off our guard and sneak in under the radar, if you will. We have blocked those all successfully. I think the system is strong, but we work constantly to make sure that's the case. It's one of the reasons why at some point fairly soon we're going to have to replace our current tax information management system with something that's both more secure and more efficient.
How old is the current system?
A decade. So a decade, and
wow.
And we're getting, it's also, we're spending so much money maintaining that system that it just doesn't make sense. And when I got there, they said, well, you know, we've never asked to have it replaced because we know we'll never get it replaced, so we just sort of patch it together and pay to maintain it. And I said, you know, you don't know. I think we should make a try. If we can make a financial case that the state will collect more money and spend less with a new system, I have every confidence that the governor and legislature would give us the opportunity to do that.
But again, the key word, if we can collect more money. Now, you mean to tell me that there's a system out there that will be able to collect more money than you can already collect with what you got?
If my people are doing less handling, fewer pass-offs, less handling, less minor data input, and they're focusing on collection, the answer is absolutely yes. So if we had a more efficient and a more reliable information management system, people would upskill, and they'd be working on higher-level tasks than they are now. There's money out there. I'm not talking about increasing taxes. I'm talking about getting to people who owe us taxes and aren't paying them. I'm talking about getting to the online sellers who owe us taxes and aren't paying them. I'm getting to the business that is pocketing their withholding or pocketing their sales tax.
And there are a good many of them doing that?
Absolutely.
If you had to make a guesstimate, could you put a dollar figure on it?
I think we have said that we would pay for the new system within 5 years, and then we're looking at, if I remember the numbers now, at least a couple $100 million of additional collection from folks. Yeah.
Now you said you're almost absolutely confident as far as the safety of e-filing. The fact that this management system currently in place is a decade old, does it make the state more vulnerable to hacking?
I think that my sense is that we have done the outside protections. An older system that is a combination of a variety of programs, which is really what we have, is always going to be somewhat more vulnerable. But my sense is that's not the big issue. The big issue for us is one of efficiency, quite frankly, and one of how our people apply their time and their work. So if we are processing, if we are having backlogs because the system doesn't move the data. One of the people asked a question about having paid their tax and it not being aware that it was put in. We, in our system, if you send your income tax in, we may not be able to tell you for 3 days whether it's there or not, because the system that takes it in electronically is different from the one that posts it electronically. That doesn't make any sense, but that's what it's been. That would need to change. So efficiency is the driver here, not so much security.
Let's go to Robert in Enfield. Robert, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. What I want to
Can you speak up,
is,
Bob? Can you speak up?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
In Enfield, we have a concept that we developed years ago. It's called shared services.
Mm-hmm.
It's not regionalization, it's shared services. We've done that with our school system. We've taken on a lot of burdens of the building and public works and police protection. The town does it. They do not let the school system do that. And we have actually saved $10 million a year by doing that. In our health district, we have shared services. It only cost the town $200,000. The regionalization plan that the state is pushing, it's going to cost us $1.5 million to $2 million under their program of regionalization. Everybody thinks regionalization is the way to go.
Okay, Bob, we're coming up on a hard break. We're going to have to go ahead. Thanks for the call. Commissioner, a quick response to that, then we have a break in 30 seconds.
A quick response is, I live in the town of West Hartford. We've done exactly that as well. There is no separate school system, no separate town system for most of the services that are here, and it has saved a great deal of money. It's more efficient. Every town should do it.
Okay, coming up to 10 minutes now before the hour of 9 o'clock, and we will be right back with Commissioner Kevin Sullivan. Stay with us. More to come. Okay, Kevin, it's been terrific talking with you, and these machines that you have now, it seems, just listening to you, that it would be probably a good investment for the taxpayers if you updated them. Do you think that can happen?
I hope that can happen. We are going to make our business case to the legislature, not this year, but next year. And we're hopeful of that. And can I just say before we get off, before we end, because I know we're going to end at some point, to Dan, that it's we don't always agree on everything, but it's great to have him back on the radio. And God knows, Brad, you need all the help you can get.
So. Thank you, Commissioner.
I knew that was coming.
Commissioner
Kevin Singer. Yeah.
Before we wrap up, Commissioner, maybe you could break down from a revenue perspective in round numbers how much the state income tax brings in, the sales tax, the cigarette tax, even money from the casinos. How much are we dependent on all of that?
Over 52%, remember like 53 now, of our state revenue stream is income tax. And a substantial portion of that stream comes from a very small group of taxpayers, the very high-end taxpayers. The second largest bite is sales tax, but that's really only down in the 30s. So those are the two main drivers. The corporate tax is not a big driver. I mean, it's a big tax, but it's not a big driver. We are a state that is very reliant on that income tax, going back to Brad's comment about it, you know, supposed to solve everything. It works well when the economy is strong, and it doesn't work very well when the economy is weak. But it is the primary.
And where is our economy right now? Where it just seems we are being, in kind of a flat place right now. Is that true or not?
No, it's not a flat place. I think you have seen substantial job recovery. I think you're seeing reinvestment now, particularly this in the last 6 months that hasn't been there. There are more jobs in Connecticut. There are more job openings in Connecticut. Unemployment is down. Wages are actually going up again, which is the most important part of all of this. But it's just not a boom. I mean, we've had boom and bust, and this is one of those times. Connecticut went deep into that deep, deep, deep recession, and it's going to take many years to get out of it. And we got to be smarter about it. We got to do different things in order to encourage different kinds of jobs that we are suited for, and that we can, you know, that we can grow in this state. And taxes and economic development are two conversations that go together. One of the things Governor Malloy has been very clear about is that we can't talk about the economy without talking about taxes. We can't talk about taxes without talking about the economy. And the first goal is to drive that economy back up.
Kevin, thank you so much. Commissioner Kevin Sullivan joining us this morning. Just great having you with us.
Yes, Commissioner, thank you. Don't be a stranger. Come back
again.
All
right, thank you so much, guys. Have a good day.
You too.
You
take care.